This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by Ultimate HA7 Joint Formula from Purity Products. Ultimate HA7 features the joint-boosting benefits of hyaluronic acid. HA works like a shock absorber, helping to cushion and soothe your joints. Plus, this HA also hydrates your skin. It's powerful support for your joints, cartilage, skin, and connective tissues. So call 800-983-1154 and get a full-size bottle of HA7 for only $9. And you also get free shipping. Call now to claim your $9 trial bottle of HA7 with free shipping. 1-800-983-1154. These move fast, so call now. 1-800-983-1154. Welcome to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and here we are once again. It is our weekly Q&A with Layla, which is an event that I anticipate and look forward to every week because it's an opportunity to field your questions and also spend some quality time with our nutritionist in residence, Layla Mudin, who capably assists me in fielding your questions. Radio program at AOL.com is the destination for questions, as always. And we got some good ones this week. Hi, Layla. How are you?
Good, Dr. Hoffman. How are you doing?
Very well, thank you. We are sort of like in the last throes of wintry weather here in New York.
And hopefully it's the last throes.
It's one of the schizophrenic months because sometimes, you go out and you say, spring is here, and then the next day it's like,
freezing.
35 degrees.
Mm-hmm.
And
I'm
windy.
Back in the Nanook hat.
Right, exactly.
My favorite.
Yeah, March is always like that. It's sort of like, it's a tease. March is a tease. So, at any rate, hopefully wherever you are across the country, around the world, you're experiencing happy climes.
Mm.
And some of you may be sweltering as we speak, because that's what I hear the weather's like in parts of
It's nice to be Florida. Back into daylight savings time
right.
once again, except that we're waking up in the dark now once again.
It's cheery.
Yeah.
They say that one of the worst days to be in the emergency room in the hospital is the Monday after they changed the clocks, which happened last week.
Right.
So because people are sort of shaken up by that, and it's kind of a stress.
Jet lag.
Yeah, it's a form of jet lag.
Yeah.
It's like flying from New York to Chicago or something. So this article, let's tee this off today's discussion with an article that I don't think will surprise you. Wide variations in how well or poorly people age. And they rated the country. Okay. So what they did was they rated them on the average problems of a 65-year-old. Now, this comes very close to home because I'm 66.
Okay.
So, what are the average problems of a 65-year-old? Well, probably they're not dead, but probably they don't feel perfect. So it's somewhere along the spectrum of feeling awesomely good every moment of the day, every day of your life, versus dead, somewhere in the middle.
And signing up for Medicare.
Exactly. Signing up for getting a senior discount at the movies and so on.
Right.
But anyway, so what they did was they compared countries with the highest and lowest ages at which people experience the health problems of the average 65-year-old. Now, how they determine the average problems of a 65-year-old, I don't know, because they didn't do a deep dive on this study. But presumably the problems include, high cholesterol and or vision problems, balance problems, aches and pains, high blood pressure, that kind of stuff.
Some arthritis.
Yeah. You know, the typical things that beset 65-year-olds.
Mm.
And of course, higher risk of certain cancers, certainly that is in the running.
Mm-hmm.
The negative effects include impaired functions and loss of physical, mental, and cognitive abilities. Okay, a lot of people with 65, the memory isn't quite what it used to be.
At 35.
Right. And what was I talking about? this article. Okay. It's right in front of me. Okay. Here it is.
Ba-dum-bum.
So they found that 76-year-olds in Japan have the same level of age-related health problems as an average person aged 65. Japan won the contest.
Wow. Everywhere in Japan or Okinawa?
I guess overall Japan.
Overall Japan. Overall Japan. Good for them.
Yeah. However, there were countries that were below the threshold. So 46-year-olds in Papua New Guinea have the same level of age-related health problems as an average person to age 65. So, you know, we think of that as a primitive country, you know, maybe hunter-gatherers, people with loincloths and bows and arrows. But no, it's actually pretty, you know, getting hit with a lot of fast food and poor quality food and sugary beverages and not a lot of good medical care and various diseases and a hard life, a hard life. So I guess the other thing about Papua New Guinea is that, like a lot of people in, I believe that's part of what's called Micronesia, which is
the
South Pacific. A lot of those people have obesity. So they are, because they subsisted on a very marginal diet, and now it's there's more in their diet. They one of the favorite things in that part of the world is spam. That's a delicacy. Spam.
In Hawaii, too.
Hawaii.
Spam and eggs.
So, anyway, they, so.
Spam sandwich.
Spam
sandwich. I said sandwich.
What they found was that the U.S. Ranked 54th among countries.
Now,
that's the discouraging part, okay?
Very.
We did a little better than Iran. No, actually, we're about the same as Iran because our equivalent is 68.5 years. In other words, the average 65-year-old in America is equivalent to the average 68.5-year-old worldwide. So we did slightly worse than the average.
Okay. All right.
That's not good.
No.
And Iran is 69.0, so we're very close to Iran. And so, for example, Antigua and Barbuda, which are, you know, you finger there and it's the balmy weather, everybody wants to go there as a tourist, the Caribbean, they don't do so well either because probably poor diet. Algeria did not, let's see, Algeria was close to the U.S.
Really?
we're situated between Algeria and Iran.
Oh, my. How does that happen?
Yeah, and we have, suppose, the most expensive, elaborate medical care system in the world. And yet, we rank with some pretty backward countries when it comes to medical infrastructure.
Right.
Algeria and Iran?
That's strange.
So clearly, the answer is not more medicine. The answer is
better lifestyle. Yes.
Yeah.
Better food choices.
And a primary, since you're a nutritionist, primary element in that is diet.
Yeah.
Right? So, yeah. So globally, the age-related diseases with the most deaths and what are called DAILIES, which is an acronym that means disability adjusted life years.
Okay.
That's the measurement of loss of healthy life related to 92 different diseases. And the countries with the most deaths and DAILIES, I'm sorry, the causes of the most deaths and these impairments were ischemic heart disease, brain hemorrhage, which is stroke.
Wow. But hemorrhagic stroke.
I don't know why I say brain hemorrhage. It's actually the less common type of stroke. I think that's probably a
Maybe they just mean stroke. Okay.
Which is mostly not, it's ischemic stroke.
Not hemorrhagic.
And chronic obstructive pulmonary disease, which of course is mostly smoking related, although I guess you could say that if you're sitting by a campfire in Peru or something like that, maybe, you know, it's, you've got an indoor, you know, heating source, that could be the problem. Countries with the lowest were New Guinea, Marshall Islands, Afghanistan, Vanuatu, a lot of South Pacific. You know, we tend to think
of,
it's so idyllic. It's like, let me go to one of those South Sea
Bora
islands.
Bora Bora.
You know, bad health statistics. Solomon Islands and Vanuatu are behind the Central African Republic, which is like, you know, used to be, I think, Congo.
Okay.
And Guinea-Bissau, which is a, you know, backward African country.
Wow.
Micronesia, very bad. Goodness gracious. Switzerland did very well.
Oh, good. My sister lives there now.
Oh, good. Singapore did really well. South Korea did well. Actually, South Korea was just a tick behind Japan. Japan was the champion.
South Korea, good.
Actually, Italy did very well.
Well, yeah, the lifestyle. Lifestyle there.
Kuwait, interestingly, you know, a country that's in the Middle East, but a very affluent country, and they have a very elaborate healthcare system because they got tons of money, oil money. Spain did well, France did well, Israel did well, Sweden pretty well. Countries that really did bad were in Africa and in Micronesia mostly.
Wow.
Yep.
And we're 54th.
Yeah. Well, to give you an idea, Sweden is number 10 and we're 54.
Huh.
Okay. Sweden, very, you know, socialized medicine, very elaborate healthcare system.
Yes.
And a pretty healthy,
but small country.
Active culture, homogeneous, you know, I think a lot of winter sports and a lot of activity, and, you know, so anyway.
Yeah, interesting.
Yeah.
Very interesting.
So, you know, we're not getting a lot of bang for our buck in our healthcare system. Okay, let's get to questions. Questions come to us via radioprogram@AOL.com.
That's good. Okay.
Let's go.
We have an email from Petra. Aloha, Dr. Hoffman and Layla. Petra is in Hawaii.
Okay.
I wanted to give you an update on my successful efforts to bring my white blood cell count back to the normal range. When you graciously read my letter on your podcast last August, my white blood cell count was around 3.
By the way, we love to hear feedback because it's sort of like we fire all this information into the ether, and we have no idea, you know, what befell you, you know, when we advise you. So give us some feedback. It worked, it didn't work, because it's instructive to our listeners.
Absolutely, yes. You suggested a number of possible remedies, one of which was colostrum. I followed your recommendation. I was taking colostrum for 5 months, although, you know, it was well worth it. It raised my white blood cell count to 4.8 from 3.0.
Oh, that's is very, very significant increase. I mean, if she said it went up from 3.0 to 3.3, I'd say, you know, it could, from day to day, it could change like
that. Right, right. So Petra says, I stopped taking it. We'll get my blood tested again in 6 months to see if it sticks. Or if I have to continue to supplement.
Right.
So I'm thrilled to say, you know, to say the least, and would like to thank you for all that you do to better our lives.
So this is what's called an anecdote. And anecdotal evidence is not great. So for example, I hear I hear a lot of
thousands of anecdotes.
Yeah, then it becomes like a study.
Yeah.
But this is what's called n of one, you know, a study of one. And otherwise known as an anecdote, and you know, or even a testimonial. And a lot of things are marketed on the basis of testimonials.
Yes.
So, for example, there's a big radio campaign right now for some sort of powdered fruit and vegetable thing. And people with these god-awful medical conditions say, I took this stuff.
And it cured me.
And you know, I can walk now, or I can see now, or I was, you know, I had a stroke and I was drooling and now I'm like, you know, playing racquetball and, you know, and
which is ridiculous.
And they sound very authentic too, because they record them very badly. They sound like they're talking over a very bad phone line, so that it gets an air of authenticity to it. So that's one level. So that's not science. That's anecdote. But, you know, I appreciate anecdote because anecdote is the basis for a hypothesis.
Yes.
Because it's an interesting observation. Let's explore that. So how do we explore it? Well, one, first of all, we have to say, is there a plausible mechanism by which this could occur? Like, it doesn't make sense, for example, to say that, you know, if I put, you know, a nail in my toe, my hair is going to start to grow.
Right.
You know, I mean, I don't understand the mechanism by which that's going to, happen, right?
Yeah.
You know, maybe some pain circuits or activator, you know, but there's no plausible mechanism for that.
No.
But with colostrum, we have a mechanism, which is that it is immunoregulatory. And so it could be that some gut-related factor, you know, addressing leaky gut or the immunoglobulins that are present there can support a healthy immune response. That's, you know, as much as we can say. I mean, I don't think there's been studies. So next, we want to do a double-blind placebo-controlled trial where we give people colostrum, where we give people some neutral powder, you know, who have low white blood cell counts, and we observe them. But we have to observe them not for a week or a month, but maybe over a year, at least. In this case, it was a year.
Yeah.
And, you know, we'd want more consistency. We want to see, well, is it 4.8? Yeah, it could be a seasonal thing or something else is going on. We want to see if this is consistent, so we'd have to do it for a while. It would be expensive to do that. Where's the money coming from? Colostrum manufacturer doesn't have that much money. They're not a pharmaceutical company. But that would be interesting. And some studies have been done on colostrum and inflammatory bowel disease, for example. Yes. I've seen some studies. Mm-hmm. There are studies that suggest that it's beneficial. Yeah. Another product that is a related product that mm-hmm. May have some equivalent benefits is something called SBI, I believe. Okay. Is that the correct initials for it? It's from Orthomolecular. It's bovine. It's bovine immunoglobulin. Yes. So it's SBI.
SBI.
Yeah, mm-hmm. and it's from Orthomolecular, and mm-hmm. that's a very interesting product because that delivers some of the benefits of colostrum if you're perhaps you're sensitive to dairy, or you know, mm-hmm. it's a variation on the theme.
Yeah. So I wonder if our listeners are wondering, so what's colostrum? What's the benefit of it? It's the first letdown of mother's milk.
Right.
For the first, at least couple of days.
And it has a variety of things. It has lactoferrin. It has other immune potentiating things. It has immunoglobulin mm-hmm. in it because it actually mm-hmm. Confers what's called passive immunity. In other words,
yes.
the child doesn't have immunity yet, mm-hmm. but it inherits immunity from the mother. It's transmitted via the colostrum. It's mm-hmm. a good way to start life. It's recognized as a very important thing in animal husbandry, where they actually separate the babies from the, you know, from the
from
mothers.
The mother, yeah,
and
early.
They, in order to reduce mortality, because that costs them money,
people
they
know.
Buy a ton of colostrum and they feed it to the calves.
Very interesting.
Yeah, or perhaps swine. I don't even know the practices in mm-hmm. agriculture. Mm-hmm. But actually, we learn a lot from veterinary medicine. So that's
Veterinary medicine.
Did I say veterinary?
It's okay. I said sandwich. It's all right.
There are some people who are grammar Nazis. I won't single anybody out in particular. Uh-huh. But, you know, some of our astute listeners will point that out and we'll get some angry letters.
So Petra goes on to another.
We'll get hundreds and hundreds of letters.
Really? Hundreds?
Hundreds.
Petra says, as an aside...
They're going to go nuclear.
They're going to go, yeah, nuclear.
Nuclear.
Yeah. Well, you know, I had to sell my house, so I got a realtor.
Uh-huh.
That.
Okay.
What's the other? So I would say nuclear. So, it's two words.
And
nuclear.
Irregardless of the criticisms,
Is such a pet peeve of mine.
Irregardless of what you're saying, I'm going to keep going on this subject.
And as we get more orientated,
yeah,
instead of oriented to
at the end of the day, it doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter. No. All right, moving on. Petra says, as an aside, in 2017, I had a heel measurement done for bone density.
Mm-hmm.
They do a heel measurement?
Okay, that's very old-fashioned. Yeah. It's sort of El Chiperino screening for bone density.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
In fact, I had one of those machines for a while.
Uh-huh.
I used it for about a year and a half, and then I got rid of it because it, you know, there's some claim to fame, but it's if you want a cheap machine to do that,
mm-hmm.
You know, it costs a few thousand dollars as opposed to tens of thousands of dollars for the DEXA machines.
Right.
That really do the accurate testing. Mm-hmm. It's not even that accurate. DEXA is not that accurate.
Yeah, it's controversial.
It's controversial.
For bone mineral density overall.
It says density, but it doesn't speak to strength.
Yes.
And it doesn't
density does not necessarily mean strength, and I think that's the question.
Right, and it doesn't speak to structure of the bone, and healthy bone has a certain structure. They're actually working on some newer tests that will actually assess the health of the bone,
mm-hmm.
You know, because what I'd be looking for is a direct measurement of strength. Is there a way to, you know, send sound waves, shock waves through the bone to see if the bone is, you know, like geologists do to assess is it sand, is it rock underneath? Mm-hmm. You know, there are ways to assess the consistency of materials if you want to look underground.
Not necessarily the density.
So newer technologies are going to, I think, revolutionize their approach to that. Unfortunately, once a test is in place, just like a mammogram or a PSA,
mm-hmm.
they just stick to that. They stick to that until... It's the status quo. Colonoscopy, same thing, even if there's newer tests that measure, can detect colon cancer via stool tests. They still want to stick to the old traditional tests for medical legal reasons because...
Yeah.
God forbid if you miss a case using a new technique that's not established mm-hmm. or standard of practice, you know, there's legal liability there.
That's right.
So
that's right.
Medicine advances one funeral at a time, they say.
Golly. On that note, Petra had a heel measurement done for bone density. It came back negative 0.9 at the time.
Which is not bad.
It's not. Yeah, and she's a 59-year-old woman.
So that might be average for a 59-year-old woman.
Sure. Although not bad, I guess. I started taking strontium.
Okay, maybe that's overkill.
That's a lot. Yeah. Strontium usually we just give for
minus
plain,
two point something or 2.5.
Osteoporosis.
Real osteoporosis. The cutoff is minus 2.5 or lower, minus 2.5, minus 3.0, minus 3.5. It goes, the numbers get bigger as you get worse because it's a negative number.
Negative numbers, right. So Petra started taking strontium and MK 5 and 7.
Okay.
Really,
I don't know about the 5.
I don't know about the 5. It's 7, definitely. And the one taken a year and a half improved from a negative 0.9 to a negative 0.8.
We're scoring big points with her. But by the way, that's not a significant enough improvement to draw
it's
a conclusion.
Not.
It just didn't get worse, which is
it
a good sign.
It didn't get worse, which is great.
As women age, it tends to get worse.
Yeah.
So we've reversed the getting worse. It was 1 year. It was a test that's not that sensitive. I would suggest that you get a DEXA bone densitometry to corroborate that.
There you go. There you go. And strontium is overkill.
Really, it might be overkill.
Yeah.
I don't, just anyone, you know, there's a lot of things you can take for prevention. You know, absolutely there's no reason not to take vitamin D and perhaps vitamin K.
And magnesium.
And there's nothing wrong with strontium, but it's yet another thing to artificially build up the bone, you know.
Yeah.
And I recommend it, and I think it is. It does prevent fractures.
Yes.
But, you know, what's the point?
Right, right. Well, strontium won't cause any of the side effects that bisphosphonates do.
It's like giving testosterone to an 18-year-old. They don't need more.
They don't need more of that. Right. Right. Petra, I would encourage you to take up strength training if you don't already and increase the protein. Because when we're in our 50s, we need double the RDA. Than a younger person does,
right.
Than a 25, a 35-year-old does.
Mm-hmm.
So as we get older, we need a little bit more of that. But listen, thank you very much for getting back to us about your white blood cell count and colostrum.
And you are a shining example to our other listeners who, you know, whether or not we addressed your question, or if you tried something, you know, on your own, or as a result of something we talked about, and it worked or didn't work, you had a side effect or a good effect, let us know, because, you know, that's how we learn.
Yeah. We have an email from Sylvia. I'm a longtime listener of your program. I value your judgment and advice. Sylvia is 82 years old.
Okay.
She says, recently I'm developing very thin hair on the back of my head. I'm having my thyroid checked since in the past I was diagnosed with hypothyroidism.
Right.
As I've aged, my body hair has become almost non-existent, and that has everything to do with hormones, too.
And aging.
Older.
And aging.
And aging.
Yeah.
What supplements might help me? Do you have any other suggestions?
Well, when it comes to body hair, the phenomenon that occurs in women, I guess to some extent in men, is that there's a decline in androgens.
Yeah.
And so, you know, that's a natural process, and sometimes
the decline in estrogen, progesterone alone.
Yeah, estrogen and progesterone don't have something to do with body hair.
Oh, body hair.
Yeah,
she's
but
complaining of
head hair.
Head hair.
You know,
yeah.
I actually think that there may be. It's worth exploring whether there's a nutritional concomitant such as low iron.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, there's a certain naturalness to hair thinning as you age. Unfortunately.
Yeah.
And you know, I wish I could fully subscribe to the miracle grow theory of hair, which is that we have some hair vitamin or supplement that works like a fertilizer and makes your hair sprout luxuriantly. It could be there's some nutritional deficiencies there, but I'd say that's maybe 20% of the cases of hair loss in 80-somethings.
Yeah.
And, you know, mostly there's a sort of programmed loss of hair.
Yes.
There's also some autoimmune components to hair loss as you age. And
it could be that, exactly. I think Sylvia might benefit from some biotin.
Biotin is worth taking.
Besides getting your thyroid checked, get your ferritin levels checked. You want to
sideline on biotin. Say you take what's often recommended, 5,000 micrograms of biotin. That's a pretty standard recommendation.
It's a pretty standard recommendation. We want to. There have been some case studies of people taking a lot of biotin. And then their thyroid numbers come back kind of wacky.
That's where I'm going.
Really out there.
Mm-hmm.
I actually had a patient with that particular scenario. And when we investigated further, I said, okay, she was taking about 10,000 micrograms of biotin.
Stop the biotin.
I said, stop, go back, get retested. Yeah. Everything went back to normal.
Right. Okay.
So that's something.
Right. And so the other thing is she might you know, we could say maybe explore whether your thyroid is low.
Yeah.
But we must be cautious about thyroid administration in 82-year-olds.
Yeah.
Because we don't want to jazz them up too much and cause a cardiac arrhythmia. So
yeah.
I would, you know, have a fairly high threshold for giving her thyroid. I wouldn't just give her, oh, your hair is thinning, your skin is dry, okay. We just give you a thyroid, you know, boom.
Mm-hmm.
No, I think we should be cautious.
Yeah, yeah. In the meantime, if Sylvia, say she does come back, I'm reaching here, if she does come back with some hypothyroidism and they don't want to give her thyroid, she might benefit from some selenium and zinc to help naturally boost your thyroid.
So that helps.
That can work.
And or, you know, small amounts of iodine also.
Yeah, iodine, that would be good.
Right.
So, Sylvia, let us know. And thank you for listening.
Okay.
All right. Let's see here. We have an email, from Nick. Hello, Dr. Hoffman and Layla.
And by the way, I just want to say parenthetically, you know, of interest, I recently interviewed Gary Linkoff, who is a very skilled plastic surgeon, a cosmetic surgeon in New York, and he specializes in hair.
Hmm.
And, you know, this is a big issue. Some people, for one reason or another, their hair is thinning. It doesn't look good. There are so many really good cosmetic procedures now that help to replenish hair. I mean, one is minoxidil, you know, just applying that, but, you know, that's works only partially.
That's Rogaine.
But, you know, they actually can do various grafts and hair transplants and things like that if you want to go through the trouble, you know.
Yeah.
And it's, I mean, I've seen his...
I think it's a little better than Hair Club for Men
Hell yeah. I mean,
plastic surgery.
You don't want to get... It's gone way beyond what... It used to be that cornrow kind of thing, you know.
Yeah.
It looks like...
Right.
Like, you know, a field in Kansas, you know, or something like that. You don't want that look.
No. You don't want that look. You don't want to look like you've got plugs literally in your scalp.
Yeah.
So that's really come a long way. And not just for hair on the head. Beard, eyebrows.
So there's this phenomenon of people who, we've talked about this, who they have had laser hair removal for their beards because they wanted to just, you know, get rid of it.
I don't want to shave anymore.
Yeah, and then they've decided that the hipster thing is to have a beard.
Yes.
Like every you know, male in between the ages of 20 and 35 in Brooklyn.
Yeah.
And so they want a beard, and it's like, oh my God. Well, frankly, when I try to grow a beard, or like, you know, I'm on vacation, like 10 days, you see me sometimes, I come back in the office to like do some paperwork, and I've got sort of like a patchwork. You know, it's scraggly. It's not like a really like nice, luxuriant beard. And so some men want to enhance their facial hair.
Yeah.
Right?
Grow in more fully.
Because what's the alternative? Is you can wear like a false beard. That looks dumb, you know.
Right. Do a comb over.
Right.
On your beard.
Right.
With the,
right.
Yeah. That
so,
doesn't work well.
You know, some of men just don't have that kind of facial hair.
You know, my husband is the same.
Yeah.
Very low.
Yeah.
Facial hair, body hair, all of that kind of thing.
Okay.
I can't imagine him in a beard.
Yeah.
Maybe a little scraggly goatee. But that's about it.
Yeah.
That's as
far
as that will go.
Yeah. Yeah.
Interesting.
So if you want to, you know, rock that Fu Manchu look, you know, you can get facial.
That Abraham Lincoln beard without the mustache, which I find. Okay.
Well, what you want is you want Abraham Lincoln beard with a knit cap and a Pendleton.
Oh, there you
and
go.
And Levi's. And what are those boots? Doc Martens.
Doc Martens, right.
That's the look you want. Abraham Lincoln would look very hip.
Very cool.
He would be, you know, he'd be like a male model now.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh. All right. We have an email from Nick. Hello, Dr. Hoffman and Layla. I'm a 22-year-old male, and I have an issue with teeth grinding.
Mm-hmm.
I wear a night guard, but I've still cracked a back molar, and I've acquired severe wear on my teeth.
Medical phenomenon of bruxing.
Of bruxing.
Right.
Bruxism, right. Are there any recommended supplements? Possibly something to relax my muscles? I take theanine, rhodiola, ashwagandha.
What about magnesium?
Ah, he doesn't mention magnesium.
Yeah, so that actually, there
that
are, I think, some studies on magnesium and bruxism.
Mm-hmm.
So that it tends to have a relaxing effect. I also might suggest CBD, you know, as a kind of a muscle relaxant, natural muscle relaxant, calmative.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's important. I actually wear a night guard because I'm a bruxer.
Okay.
And the way it came up is, you know, people have told me that I grind my teeth. And you can hear it. It's disconcerting. It's a loud kind of sound. And the dentist pointed out that I had an unusual wear pattern on my molars. And if I kept bruxing, that I would have more tooth damage. So
it's erosion.
Yeah.
Much.
So I wear night guards.
It's a good idea.
Yeah.
It's a good idea. I used to wear a night guard when I used to grind my teeth
mm-hmm.
after graduate school.
Mm-hmm.
I magically stopped grinding my teeth. You think it was a stress component?
Yeah.
I had a very full schedule, come home 10 o'clock at night,
right.
grind my teeth.
Wait, you were working and in graduate school?
Yes,
oh, yeah, right.
Yes.
Right.
Yes,
you'd,
yeah.
So you had a day job and then you... Right.
Right. Come home and open the fridge and find a jar of mustard and say, oh, well, I'm not going to have dinner now. So, or something.
Well, you can make mustard soup. That's very good.
I can make mustard soup, right.
I've done that. Yeah. When we were in the dorms, we didn't have any money, and it was like, man, it's so cold tonight. I'd have to go to the deli.
Have to go do this? No, it's 10 o'clock. The deli's closed. No, wait, I'm here in New York.
Yeah, just, different. You know, heat it up in a pot.
What was interesting at the time when I wore a night guard, Dr. Hoffman, is I found that the night guard temporarily made matters worse. I would clench even more to break it almost.
You almost became self-conscious.
And,
well, also they can malposition your jaw, so you have to be careful. It can create TMJ. Yeah. I've actually had a patient the other day who said that I complimented her on her teeth. I said they did a nice job because I knew that she'd had dental surgery.
Yeah.
I said, really, they look magnificent. And she said, I wish I'd never had it done. I said, why? She said, because they gave her beautiful teeth, but without an idea to the positioning. And the positioning.
Porcelain veneers.
Yeah. And the positioning caused her to have bad, severe TMJ, like real severe pain.
Wow.
And she has trouble chewing and eating with these teeth.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
That needs a do-over, literally.
Well, I don't know.
What do you do?
You'd grind it down more. I don't know what you do, you know.
Wow. Okay.
And it's expensive.
Buyer beware.
You spend a lot of money for
Yeah, buyer beware.
My grandfather said I should have become a dentist.
Huh.
Yeah.
Would you have considered it? Was that ever an interest?
I always wanted to do medicine, you know.
Well, there you go. Okay.
No, but he was all about...
Right.
All about the... potential economic outlook for dentists. And, you know, he's a smart guy. He's a businessman. And, you know, he's, don't become a doctor. You could become a dentist.
Right.
This sort of Eastern European survivor mentality.
So, Nick, you're taking some good supplements, the theanine, the rhodiola, the ashwagandha. He takes it in the morning before bed. Minimal results. Add magnesium.
Yeah.
And take a good hard look at the stress in your life. See what else you can do about that. That might help. But I think so much of it is, I remember even finding myself clenching during the day.
Mm-hmm.
It's the same way you would notice your shoulders moving up when you're feeling stressed. And you have to remember to relax.
So unlearn that.
Unlearn all that.
Well, we're going way over time.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, so that's okay. Our listeners will indulge us. But in part two, we're going to take up what?
What is your opinion of resistant starch?
Oh, right. That's a whole subject unto itself. Let's take that up in part two. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, today with Layla Mutin. It's our weekly Q&A with Layla, and we'll be right back.